सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ So we have started this beautiful Upanishad on meditation, and we saw the Shanti Mantra to begin with, Om Bhadram Karne Bihi. And then the student Ashwalayan approached the teacher, Brahmaji himself, none other than Brahmaji himself, and asked a question. Adihi Bhagavan Brahma Vidyam Varishtham. Please tell me, O Bhagavan, what is this supreme knowledge, Brahma Vidya, Vidya about Brahman, which is very secretive, very not known by too many people, and only the pure-hearted, pure-minded people can know it. That knowledge which only can be known by the pure-hearted people, pure-minded people. And why should I know it? Because by knowing that knowledge, all my sins will be washed away. Yaya acharat sarva papam vyapohoya. All my sins. And sin here means my identification with my body, mind, intellect. That is the highest sin. There is, we think all these other lower things are sins. They are at a certain level. But for a seeker, then finally, in the final stages, this identification itself becomes very sinful. And he is requesting that that final identification be broken. Paratparam purusham yati vidman. So this supreme knowledge is known by the vidman. The wise men know this purusha, the supreme purusha. Here purusha means pure consciousness. And to that, Brahmaji replied, the three ways of knowing this Brahma Vidya Varishtham are Shraddha, Bhakti and Dhyana. So faith, devotion and meditation. Faith representing Shravanam, because the three methods that Shruti has given us is Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam. Shravanam needs a predominance of faith. There has to be a lot of faith in the teacher, in the scriptures, in the means, in our own selves that I can do this. So a lot of faith is required. In Mananam, there is a predominance of devotion. And then in Dhyana, Nididhyasanam, it is a very, very alert and vigilant mind that is required. And only a pure mind can be alert and vigilant. A mind which has got many, many worldly thoughts is considered impure. The thought may not be impure, and that's what sometimes the mind justifies, saying that, oh, I'm not thinking of bad things, I'm thinking of good things. But in the seat of meditation, both good and bad thoughts have to be transcended. It'll be easy to transcend good thoughts, and therefore, even before we reach the seat of meditation, if we can get rid of all the impure thoughts, it is best. So that is what is meant by purification of the mind. Then these are the ways to get it, and the next two verses tell us what the next verse tells us what cannot give us liberation or cannot give us this knowledge. And the first thing is karma. We talked about it. Karma is finite, and karma can only do a few things. So in that, liberation doesn't fall. So karma cannot give you direct liberation. It is a means to purify the mind, and therefore karma is definitely required. Na prajaya, prajaya here means progeny. So offspring cannot give you liberation. Nobody, even the guru cannot give you liberation. How can the child give you liberation? Liberation cannot be given because we are already liberated. And that's why nobody can give it to us. Dhanena, wealth. There are many, many things that can be obtained by wealth, but then there are quite a few subjective things that wealth cannot give us, like sleep, appetite, health, all these things, peace of mind. Wealth cannot give me peace. So it will give me security, but not necessarily peace of mind. If it cannot give me these finite things from the world, how can it give me liberation? So wealth is also not the way. Then what is the way? Tyaga alone, renunciation alone. And what do I need to renounce? Is this identification from my mind, identification to my body, mind and intellect. Amrutatvam Anushuhu. Anushuhu will come. Then Amrutatvam will come. Come means not that it is coming from anywhere else. Means you will realize your immortal nature. I am already immortal. See, the thing is that we are already immortal. It is not like we will become immortal. There is, if you were to become immortal, that means we are now mortal and then become. It is not like that. We are already immortal. The only thing is we are not aware of that fact. And that is what is meant by Amrutatvam. We will become aware. We will realize our immortal nature, which I already am even today. It is not something to be gained in the future. And which is Parena. Parena, even more superior than Nakam. I explained to you, Nakam means heavens. So heavens is a limited place. It's a point of return. And this Amrutatvam, this immortality, is beyond the heavens because it's a point of no return. So it is beyond all the lokas, the seven lokas that are above this mortal world. It's beyond all those. Nihitam guhayam vibhrajadete yatayat vishanti. So nihitam, it is secret. Nihitam is secretively hidden. It's hidden in the guha, cave of the heart. And then in that cave, vishanti is to enter. In that cave, the one who strives to enter can enter the cave. That is what is meant. And the one to enter the cave means to go introverted, to go inwards. And the one who strives for it can achieve it. So it's not an impossible thing to do. It is possible, but it requires a lot of patience and hard work. It is a lot of hard work. Though karma doesn't give, but it is hard work to just purify the mind. So that's the point there. Next one, the first line, Vedanta Vidnyana Sunishchitarthat. So it describes the realized person. So Vedanta Janita Vidnyana. So this person who strives for it, to enter that cave of the heart, to get that knowledge, to get that Amrutatva, to get that immortality, he is now sunishchit artha. Artha not meaning. Artha means the object. He has got it. He is very well established in that immortality, in that highest liberation. He's very well established. And how did he get it? He got it because of sannyasa yoga. And sannyasa, again, samyak nyasa. Nyasa, I told you, is to throw away. So he has very well thrown away. What has he thrown away? Identification with the body, mind and intellect. So that is what he has given up, his identification. His mind is very, very pure. Shuddha sattva there means mind. His mind is extremely pure because of this identification being given up. And then he reaches Brahma Lokeshu. Brahma Lokeshu here means pure consciousness. It does not refer to Brahma Loka, because that Brahma Loka also is finite. It is a loka, it is a world. So this is not what it is referring to. Brahma Lokeshu Paraantakale. Paraantak means the extreme end, means extreme end of the body. Because if you are immortal, there is no end to us per se, but there is an end to this body. So when he drops this body, he will reach that Brahma Lokeshu, not the loka, but the pure consciousness. Paramratat Parimuchanti Sarvehe. Parimuchanti, Pari, all around. Being released all around from this entire world of coming and going, birth and rebirth, sansar, what we call, he will be very well liberated from it, and he will then never ever come back. Okay, those two verses I already told you that we chant them with the Purna Kumbha. They have only to be chanted for sannyasis and not for anybody else. Okay, now the question arises is exactly how do I do this? And therefore now Brahmaji starts his discourse on how to meditate. I told you already that this book is the original from where Bhagwan has taken Bhagavad Gita and from where Guruji has taken Dhyana Swarupam. So you will see a lot of parallels because this is the original, this is the Shruti. So we are on verse 5. Vivek. Deshe cha sukhasanastaha shuchi samagriva shirashariraha atyashramastha sakalendriyani nirudhya bhaktya swam swagurum pranamya ratpundarikam virajam vishuddham vichintya madhe vishadam vishokam. in an undisturbed place, resting in a comfortable posture, clean and pure, with neck, head and body in one line, held erect, in a mental attitude of sannyasa, having controlled all the senses, saluting one's own teacher mentally with reverence, meditate within the lotus of the heart, the untainted, the pure, the clear, and the griefless. So many instructions. So let us start with the first one. Vivikta Deshe. This word comes in chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita as well. Deshe here doesn't mean country, place. And Vivikta means a separate place. And separate means in solitude. Means separate from all other disturbances. That is what is meant. So we can have the solitude in our own house. We can have a corner of a room, a quiet place. Or meditation can also be done quiet place and shuchi is there. Shuchi, so pure. See, pure places are considered as in the forest is considered a pure place. Mountaintop is considered a pure place. On the banks of the river, you know, there are rishis, our saints and sages meditating on the banks of the river Ganges. That also is considered, those are considered pure places. But not that every day we can go on a mountaintop or, you know, on the banks of the river. So in our own home, we can find a quiet corner to meditate and we need to keep it clean. So, you know, there is not all, the reason is, you know, if it's some, of course, here we don't have problem with ants and all, but if they come and something is, you know, somewhere, something, if the spider is going, then our attention will be drawn there, this, that. So keep it clean. The place should be clean and in solid, secluded spot, ekanta, alone. Because, of course, we do guided meditation, but that is only for guidance. The actual meditation needs to be done alone. In solitude. Okay, so Vivikta Deshe Cha and Sukha Asanastaha. So the first thing to be done is to steady the body, because if the body itself is not steady, how the mind will become steady? So the body, this asana siddhi is gained if you can sit in one position for 30 minutes without moving at all. According to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he says that is the minimum time to say that you've got asana siddhi, means perfection in asana, in posture. Okay, and Patanjali Yoga Sutras describes asana as it has to be stable and comfortable. Those are the two words that he uses. So how should my asana be? It should be stable. So what it means is you cannot be sitting on a swing and saying, oh, I will meditate on the swing. Or I will meditate in a rocking chair. Okay. Or I will walk up and down the house, my room. I've got a big passage. I can walk and then this thing. No. Or I lie down and meditate. No. The reason is lying position, you know, horizontal is tamasic position. Standing position is a rajasic position. And sitting position is a sattvic position. Therefore, when you see that, when you want to instigate people, like a military general, you know, he will never give his lecture to his soldiers sitting down. He will always be standing. A politician will be standing. Because what they're doing is what they want to invoke that rajas in the people, in the soldiers. They want to instigate them, not invoke them, instigate them to fight, instigate them to, you know, do work. Then you stand because you need rajas. But with meditation, you have, and of course, tamas means you'll fall asleep only. So what is the point in doing it in a tamasic position? So when you're very tired and all, see, you feel like lying down. So that's why you need, I told you in meditation, alert and vigilant mind is required. So when your mind is really tired and this thing, meditation is not recommended. Because the reason is the mind will go to sleep. That's why. So sitting position is considered as a sattvic position. So the body also should be maintained in sattva. That way it will help the mind also be maintained in sattva. Stability is one thing. So that if you're meditating outdoors, then please don't go sit on the edge of a cliff, you know, where you look down and suddenly you'll be like get dizzy. Don't go sit like that. Or too much in the river, you know, water is coming on your body. Then everything, you'll be disturbed. So stability has to be there and it has to be comfortable. So the thing is that if you can't sit cross-legged on the floor, you can sit in a chair, but a stable chair, not a rocking chair, not a swing like that. Okay. So and the practice should begin with sitting in this posture for 5 minutes. Meditation practice begins by practicing sitting in one place without moving the body here and there, without getting fidgety. That is where meditation practice starts, practice of meditation. Mind, forget it. Don't try to, you know, get the mind under control. Try to first get the body under control and start with 5 minutes, increase it to when you have, that is Patanjali says that when for 30 minutes you can sit without thinking about your body, without it itching and this and that and all that, then you start working on the mind. So get your asana, this thing. Therefore, sukha asanastha means, sukha here means not happiness, means comfortable. So get into a posture which is very comfortable for you. Just because everybody else is sitting on the floor, you need not sit on the floor. If you can't, sit in a chair. That's okay. No worries. Shuchi hi, purity. Of course, there is purity, external purity as well as internal purity. So external purity, I already told you outside. In Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan has said, keep a deer skin, right? Some skin, he has said, animal skin. In those days, animal skin will prevent insects from coming. And people used to meditate in the forest, etc. And that's why that was given. So we must not say that I don't have an animal skin, so I can't meditate. That is not the point. We have a carpet. It's very fine. We can sit on the carpet and or a yoga mat or anything and we can sit. We don't have ants and reptiles and all around us in the house to come. So we cannot use that logic. That is wicked logic. That is, oh, but I don't have that, you know. So previously they would put a bed of grass and then they would put this in the deer skin or animal skin. And on top they would put a soft cotton cloth. So to absorb the sweat. That was the idea at that time. So, but we don't sweat in this country. We don't need that. So we basically just take the basic, comfortable and stable and pure, clean. We want clean. If you want as an aid to meditation, you can use incense stick and fragrance, some music, you can. But ultimately, please realize that all those things have to be dropped because they are making the mind go extroverted. So ultimately, they have to be dropped. But in the initial stages or idle, if you want, you can focus on the idle. You can do all those things, all in the initial stages. So purity of mind and purity of surroundings to be maintained. Sama griva shira shariraha. So griva neck, shira head and sharira back, sama, in one straight line. What is this said is that medically, the spinal fluid then remains, you know, when the back is straight, if you slouch and sit like this, then somewhere along the line that back is going to start hurting. So when the spinal fluid, because there is a fluid in the spine, when it is straight, it flows smoothly, it is said. So that will aid in meditation when you're sitting. So it is always a good idea to sit straight in the initial stages. If you want to lean against the wall, you can, but ultimately the leaning also should be given up. So if you're sitting cross-legged, then sit up straight, sit up tall, like they say, you know, sit up tall. So then that fluid flows without any, you know, hindrance, and it will help in concentration of mind. So samagriva shira sharira ati ashramastha. Ati ashramastha means ashramas, excuse me, we have four ashramas as we know: brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha and sannyasa. So ati means transcending all ashramas. Means what? Means when you sit on the seat of meditation, you must not sit as a brahmachari, means as a student. Why? Because if you sit as a student, means mentally, yeah, in the seat of meditation, what thoughts will come to you? I have to study, tomorrow is my exam, I have to write this paper, I have to write that thesis, I have to do this, I have to do that. Because depending on where your identification is, those type of thoughts are going to come into the I. It's like, say, I am the president of the country, then my thoughts are for the whole country. because I'm if I'm identified with the role of my of the president, then my thoughts will be for the whole country. If, say, in this case, if I sit as a grahastha, so if I'm sitting as a mother, my thoughts will be of my children. If I'm sitting as a wife, my thoughts will be of my husband. So that role should not, that is what is meant by ati ashrama, means don't sit as a brahmachari or as a grahastha or even as a vanaprastha. What we need to do is sannyas ashram is, sannyasi is only connected with God. So when we are on the seat of meditation, we must consider ourselves to be a sannyasi. That is the idea. Sannyasi means what? Now, this is my time only for God, only to think about God. It is not my time to think about my house and my children and my this and that. And if I sit as an employee, I will think about office. If I sit as a president of the country, I will think of the country. If I sit as a, you know, as a teacher, I will think of my students. So this is what is meant. The relationships have to be transcended. In the seat of meditation, when I'm doing meditation, all my relationship to the world must be cut off. So as a friend, I should not think of my friends. I should not think of my enemies. I should basically not think of any, because that is not what meditation is meant for. So this is what is meant by atyashramastha, ati ashramastha. So you transcend all the ashramas, get into that sannyasa mode of mind. Physically, there's no sannyasa, not that you have to wear orange and sit. No. Mentally, you cut off your relationships with everything external. And then you sit. Don't sit as an owner of property. Then you'll think of the property. Don't sit like that. So sit this thing. This is what is meant by atyashramastha. Sakalendriyani nirudhya, sakala indriyani, all the senses nirudhya, withdrawn. All the senses, because the senses are cursed to go outward, they will go outward. Now what happens is, with eyes it is easy, we can close our eyes, but ears we cannot close. Okay, nose we cannot close. Mouth, we can, therefore, you can't sit with a bag of chips next to you. Let me meditate and, you know, while eating. No. You're not allowed. That's because the senses have to be controlled. Now, what will you do with the breathing and what will you do with the ears? You can't. So what is meant by senses to be controlled is, like I said, eyes you can close, okay. But mental, the mind attached to the senses, that connection has to be broken. That is what is meant by sakalendriya. It means transcending the senses. Means you withdraw from the senses. Means you do not allow the senses to disturb you. Means if there is some sound that happens in the house, you don't let not the mind run through the ears to that sound. Let not the mind run through the nose to some smell or something. Suppose something burnt on the stove. Now, that's why you must do it in a quiet time. Not like, oh, you're putting something on the stove. Now let me go meditate. That is not the time to meditate. So let the mind not run out with the senses is what is meant by sakalendriyani, means nirudhya. Withdraw the senses. Okay? Because physically they are not going anywhere. They are there only. So mental withdrawal is required. Nirudhya. Bhaktya swagurum pranamya. Pranamya in with devotion, salutations to your guru or God. Please help me. You know, see this mantra is there. Om sahana bhavatu. We chant every this thing, like, and I've explained it to you, like, may the student and the teacher be protected, etc., etc. May we enjoy each other, may have a knowledge. That mantra also in the seat of meditation alone. If you chant, subjectively what it means is my senses and me, may they cooperate with me. Om sahana vavatu there alone. When if I'm alone and I'm chanting it, what it means is me and my senses, may they be protected from the outside world. May they be protected from the disturbances outside. May not anything disturb me. May we enjoy each other. Because you see, if the senses don't enjoy my company, they're going to run out. The mind is going to run out. So may the senses enjoy whatever that I'm meditating on. That is the subject. That way you can take it subjectively, that mantra. So it's not like now is plural. So it has to be only said when there are people around you, like all of us, we chanted Om Sahana Vatu at the beginning of the class. That is the meaning of it. But alone also, you must do that prayer, Sahana Avatu, and then think, please, oh senses, please cooperate with me now. I'm sitting in the seat of meditation. Please cooperate with me. Enjoy my company. Don't run away. Let us enjoy each other's company. Let us remain in this thought. So all those meanings come subjectively. And then you prostrate mentally, prostrate to your guru. Rith Pundarikam, Rith heart, in the cave of the heart. Because already it has been said that the one who enters the cave of the heart. See, the reason that this cave of the heart is given inside, two, three reasons. When I, in our normal day-to-day conversation, if I'm saying to somebody, I did this or I said this, do I do I said it, I did it, or do I point to my heart? Right? Heart. Right? I said. So that is the indication that the I is here at the heart. It is not here. It is not, I don't point to my stomach, point my finger at my, I did it. I did it. Everybody universally, when they want to say that I have done this, I have said it, I have not done it, whatever, whenever the I word is used, the finger is pointing to the heart, to the chest, you know, upper part of the body, right? It's not saying, I did it, I did it, I did it, I did it. We don't say that. Even when I say, I saw it, I heard it, I smelt it, I spoke it, this finger always goes to the heart. So that itself is an indication that the I, and here, of course, when I'm saying it in normal parlance, it is meaning ego, but the ego is nothing but pure consciousness itself. And therefore, the pure consciousness is there, and therefore, it has to be meditated upon in the cave of the heart. One reason. Second reason is, we do say that the pure consciousness is all pervading. So the question might arise is, why do I need to meditate on the heart? Why don't I meditate on something outside? But when you start meditating on something outside, it will always have a form and a name, and you will digress into that. So this heart also, it is not the biological heart, because that also has a shape and a form. It is the spiritual heart, which is considered to be on the right side of the chest. So it is the spiritual heart that needs to be concentrated upon. The mind, and another thing, that is what is making the mind go inside. It is very essential that to realize the self, we make the mind introverted, we go inside. Even though the supreme reality is all pervading, that is not, we are not denying that. We are not saying that the supreme reality is only in the heart. We cannot say that. Otherwise, all pervading nature will be negated. We cannot say that. We'll make it limited also. It is limitless. It is infinite. But if you want to really get to it, you need to concentrate on the heart. And that's why it is said, Rith Pundarikam, Virajam Vishudam. Virajam, Raja is Rajas. It means Rajas and Tamas are the impurities. So Virajam means without, Vigata. Here V means Vigata, Vigata Rajam. Vigata means without any taint of impurity. There's absolutely no Rajas. There is absolutely no Tamas. Vishuddham, Visheshena Shuddham. Extremely pure. And the reason it is extremely pure, we say, is because there is nothing else. Anything, you know, if you say that there is an, it means there is something, if there's a stain on the cloth, then that some, that foreign color, that foreign thing, something is there, oil, color, something other than the cloth is there. Therefore, the cloth is considered dirty or stained or tainted or whatever. But in the case of pure consciousness, there is nothing other than pure consciousness. So how can there be any kind of taint, any kind of color, any kind of impurity? So that's for Vishuddham, Visheshena Shuddham, it's extremely pure. Vichintya Madhe, Vichintya, Visheshena Chintya means think. Vishadam Vishokam, Reverend Meditate within the lotus of the heart, the untainted, pure, clear, Vishadam, clear. What is he giving? Pure Vishuddham, meditate inside, Vishadam, clear. So it is very clear, Vishok, very clear, and Vishokam without sorrow. All this VV is negative. So, Vigata Rajam, Visheshena Shuddham, Vichintya, again, Visheshena Chintya. So, concentrating, making the mind extremely single-pointed, very clear, that which is extremely clear. See, why it is said this clear word is used, isn't it not very, very clear to me that I exist? So actually this Atma is very clear to us, actually. But because of these impurities in the mind, I now consider this body only to be Atma. That is what I consider. I consider myself to be the body, to be the mind, to be the intellect. Right? So it is actually very clear, but yet it is not known by people. And therefore it is called a secret. Okay? Now, this is the meaning of this verse. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, where meditation is, all the sutras are on how to meditate, in that he gives some prerequisites to meditation. See, this is Upanishad. Okay, I told you, the student is very highly, highly developed. So for him, suddenly to, you know, it is okay for Brahmaji to say, you go sit in a corner and you do this, this, this and concentrate. And the student perhaps can do it. We saw in Kenopanishad, an instruction was given. It is the subject. It is the eye of the eye. It is the ear of the ear. The students were had to go and meditate. And then they realized. Are we at that stage to do that? I'm not. I cannot say for anybody else. I know I'm not. So what we also need along with this, it's some prerequisites. And those prerequisites are given by Patanjali in Patanjali's Yoga. So I'm going to tell you a few of those preparatory steps to meditation. Because when we read this and we think, okay, now suddenly I'll start meditating, it will not be possible. There are certain don'ts and there are certain do's that Patanjali prescribes, sage Patanjali. So the don'ts are called as yama. There are his Ashtanga yoga, eightfold limbs of this attaining samadhi begins with yama. So the first one is yama. For those of you who have done yoga, you will know this. There is yama, there is niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and then samadhi. This verse is basically, it is starting at the third asana and it is going into samadhi. But even to get that stability of asana, there is two things prior to that, that Patanjali has recommended, and that is yama and niyama. Now yama is don'ts, yama is restraint. So restrain yourself from doing certain things. Why? The reason to restrain ourselves from, and I'll tell you exactly what those five things are, some of you might know it already, is to prevent us from doing nishiddha karma. In chapter 3, if you remember, there are five types of karmas also. One is nitya karma, naimittika karma, nishiddha karma is the third one. Prayashchitta karma is there, fourth one, and then kamya karma, five types of karma. So nitya karma is your daily duties. Okay, which is you take a bath, you brush your teeth, you go to work, you go to school, you cook, all those nitya karma. Naimittika karma is which come only once in a while. Like Shraddha karma is considered naimittika. Or pujas, you do Satyanarayan puja once a month, or you do fast once a week. That becomes a naimittika, means occasional karma. Okay, nishiddha karma is do not do. That is what is nishiddha karma. So don't steal, don't lie, don't, you know, cheat, don't hurt others. All those fall under this nishiddha karma. In the karma kanda, they say if you do suppose some nishiddha karma, something which you shouldn't be doing, there always is a prashchit karma, an antidote for that one. You know, so then you do prashchit. Okay, then which is to repent, you know, prashchit is to repent, remorse, have remorse. And then kamya karma is the desirous action. So it is not my nitya karma, but I desire to see a movie. I desire to go for a concert, a music thing, or whatever, you know, I go for a walk. So those fall under kamya karmas. So they're not your nitya karma, neither are they your naimittika karma, because naimittika karma also is ordained, nitya karma is ordained, but kamya karma is not ordained. It is not a, you must go and see a movie. No, if I desire to see a movie, I will go. If I don't desire, I don't have to. It is not giving me any papa or punya. If I go see the movie, it's not giving me punya. If I don't go see the movie, it is not giving me papa. But that is not the case with nitya and naimittika. Okay, that's what we mean by ordained and not ordained. Now, this nishidha karma, the don'ts, this is what we must not do. If we want to make ourselves ready for meditation on the higher, we must not do certain things. And this yama involves five things. They are the external disciplines. So it includes ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, and aparigraha. Okay, so ahimsa, which will prevent us, ahimsa is non-injury. Non-injury by thought, word, and deed. Okay, see, there is one thing, we can hurt somebody physically. Then we can hurt somebody by saying something. Or even if we don't have the guts to say in my mind, you know, let something bad happen. So in my thought also, I can do hinsa. So ahimsa will prevent us from doing this. That falls under yama. That is a restraint. Don't inadvertently, sometimes it does happen that we may hurt people, but at least not knowingly, don't do that. Satya means not that don't do satya. Satya means which restrains you from speaking asatya. So speak truth always. So do not be untruthful. And truth is alignment between thought, speech, and action. That is what truth is. Whatever you think, you must speak, and whatever you speak, you must do. That is why they say think before you speak, because if you speak, then you must do it. If you speak and don't do, it becomes a lie. So if you at least think, and if you don't speak, it's okay because nobody else knows about it. But if you think of something and then if you speak it, then you may as well do it. Okay. So asteya is what is that? Stealing. Asteya is do not steal. Okay. So now the latest is identity theft. Now nobody is stealing any wallets or purse or anything. They're just stealing identities. So don't steal. Brahmacharya, very much misunderstood word as abstinence from sex. It is actually a withdrawal of all the senses, a control on all the senses. So brahmacharya is a restraint of all the senses. Okay. So speech. So excessive, you know, watching movies, excessive music, excess in sense indulgences have to be avoided. Remember, these are the preparatory stages for going into the seat of meditation. So in the seat of meditation, already it has been told, sakalendriyani nirudhya. If you have not controlled your senses in your day-to-day life, if for 5 minutes you sit on that seat of meditation, do you think you can control the senses ever? No. So that practice has to be there throughout. Then when you sit for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, at least at that time, your senses will say, okay, you can say, okay, now for 30 minutes, you cannot go anywhere to the senses. Don't go anywhere. Right. But if the senses are not habituated only to doing that, now suddenly you try to force them to stay, they will not stay. And that's why these preparatory stages of yama and niyama are very essential. Okay, and aparigraha is non-hoarding. So one hoarding is the physical things that we hoard, which are, if you look in the house, half the things are never used, never known, they're there, whatever. That is one thing. But mainly hoarding of thoughts, hoarding of emotions means what, you know, like, oh, she was rude to me. Now I'm never going to speak to her. You know, like, keeping, if you look at Swamijis and Sannyasis and all, I've told you many times, Gurudev used to get angry at some person. If, you know, if he saw him not doing things properly or whatever, he'll get angry. But the next time when he saw that person, he has already forgotten that anger. It's not carried forward. That is what is meant by non-hoarding in mental. Don't carry it forward. Don't take it to an extent that, you know, then there is bad feelings, there's that. Okay, it happened. Forget about it. So that is non. So there is one physical non-hoarding, because the more things you have in the seat of meditation, the more thoughts will be for those things. That also is an idea. Because I told in meditation, in the seat of measure, already we have to be in sannyasa. It means you have to cut off from everything else. Now, the less things you have, the less thoughts you will have. It's obvious. So non-holding, therefore aparigraha. These are the don'ts. These are the restraints. And then niyama is shaucha. First one in niyama. Niyama is do's, injunctions. Do. Shaucha is cleanliness. So cleanliness of body, cleanliness of speech, cleanliness of mind. How do you clean the speech? By taking Bhagwan's name. So namasmarana is the way to cleanse your speech. Body, yes, we know soap and shampoo and everything, perfumes and all that is body cleanliness. Cleanliness of mind is less likes and dislikes. So there should not be very strong likes and dislikes. You know, like I love it or I hate it. That sort of thing should not be there. So that is meant by shaucha, cleanliness. Santosha, contentment. Contentment doesn't mean that you're rich and you've got everything. But whatever that you have, you're happy in that. That is what is meant by contentment. So it could be even just a small hut, a small flat, a small condo, a small whatever car. But you're happy. Not like I want bigger than this, bigger than this, bigger than this. So that is what is contentment. Tapaha is austerities. So certain amount of austerities are necessary, like fasting. It gives us willpower. What austerity does for us, it gives us willpower. I can stay without, eating sugar for a month. I can get up every day early in the morning and I will go for a walk. That all that falls under tapas, austerities. It gives you purification of the mind. Because it will give you strength of mind. Strength comes from purification. Like, okay, now I have decided that for the next, 8 days, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to talk or I will not talk for a certain amount time in the day. I will keep myself to myself. Or I every day at this time, I will sit and do my puja or I will sit and do my studies, swadhyaya or something like that. So all that falls under austerities. It will help in purifying the mind. It will help in strengthening the mind. And when you sit on the seat of meditation, that strong mind will be an asset to you to concentrate on the ritpundrikam, on the pure consciousness in the heart. Because to concentrate the mind on one point requires a great deal of strength. A weak mind is a mind which is dissipated, which is anekagra, means it is multi-directional. It is going in every single direction. That is the sign of a weak mind. A strong mind will be able to concentrate itself on one particular object. Okay, and in Vedantic meditation, the object is always pure consciousness. So that is why this tapa is required. Swadhyaya is self-study. So this also what we are doing is swadhyaya, but also what is required, an instruction like this with a teacher or class can only happen once a week. So daily reading is required and that falls under swadhyaya. So not that you also listen to come to class and listen, but also you do some reading. Depending on your lifestyle, choose a time and choose a text. I say even one verse of the Gita, one this thing and time. You decide that I can only spare 10 minutes to do reading. Okay, fine. That's fine. But the discipline of maintaining that 10 minutes even. So as per your schedule, you decide. Don't think, you don't look at somebody else. Oh, they're doing 2 hours of studying every, I should also do. No, you may have a full-time job. They may not have a full-time job. So they can give 2 hours, but you can only give half an hour. You can only give 15 minutes. That's fine. You decide, but then stay with it. Okay, so swadhyaya is also very important because swadhyaya is not reading worldly things, reading spiritual, because then the mind is, getting used to those type of thoughts, getting established in those thoughts. All these things, when you sit in the seat of meditation, will be very, very, very helpful. Swadhyaya. And then Ishwara Pranidhana is surrender to the Lord. So the surrender to the Lord is to understand that whatever is happening, whatever I'm doing is only because of the grace of the Guru or the Lord. Okay, because Guru and God are one and the same. So that's why. That's why in the first verse also he says, Adihi Bhagavan. That is the attitude that towards your spiritual Guru, you must have the attitude of he being a Bhagavan. Okay, so this is yama and niyama. Third one he says is asana. So that's why he says that even before you go into the mind, yama and niyama, level of the asana, level of the body. Okay? Because why? Yama don't, it's all at the level of the body and the mind, right? So yama, niyama and asana is at the level of the body. And I told you already about asana, stable and comfortable. So that asana has to be perfected, and the perfection is considered as 30 minutes of sitting without moving at all. Okay, so asana, then pranayama, then you come to the pranas. So first body, now you come to the pranas. Now you practice pranayama. Now the authentic pranayama that is done, which is, you know, puraka, kumbhaka, rechaka, must not be done without the guidance of a guru. Must not. Do not attempt it on your own. But observation, basic observation of breath can be done without. So that is also pranayama. So basically, and this is the method that Bhagavan Raman Maharshi gives in Upadesh Sar. Because simple people, you know, they reach up or take it in from one nose, then hold it in, then relate it, go out of other nose. If there is a guru to teach you all that, please go ahead. No problem. Okay, but if there is not, it is not necessary. So what you can do is observe the breath, just go in and out, and that is itself is pranayama. And the reason to observe the breath is because breath and mind are the two branches of the same tree. So when you control one, the other one will come under control, and you can see that in deep sleep. When a person who is fast asleep, his breathing will be extremely, very regulated breathing will be there, because the mind is completely under control. The breath will automatically come under control. Same way, if the breath is under control, mind also will come under control. You see a person who is very agitated or angry, look at how he breathes. Very fast breathing, uncontrolled breathing, because the mind is going uncontrolled. So pranayama is next, and then the senses. Pratyahara. So pull the senses inwards. Means what? Cut the mind. That is what was said. Sakalendriyani Nirudhya. So to pull the senses in, all these do's and don'ts will help. When we have practiced the yama and niyama in our day-to-day life, and you can do it simultaneously. So yama, niyama, practice it in your day-to-day life. And also start the practice of meditation. It is not like let me perfect yama and then let me perfect niyama and then I will go into meditation. Not like that. You do both. It will help. They are conducive to each other. So the more of yama niyama is perfected, the more of meditation will become easier. So yama niyama, yama and niyama, if you really think about it, it's not that difficult to follow. So asana, pranayama, pratyahara, and then the process of meditation actually begins. So then there is dharana, which is practice of keeping the mind on one thought or one object. What you must know is that Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, they do not give the object. From dharana onwards, Vedantic meditation and Patanjali's meditation, they separate. They are different. Because what we say, what Vedanta says, is that already this is given. Rit Pundarikam Virajam Vishuddham Vichintya Madhe Vishadam Vishokam. This dharana, this practice of keeping the mind on one spot, has to be done only on Brahman, only on pure consciousness, is what Vedanta says. But Patanjali gives a whole lot of objects. So what he says is, to make the mind steady, you can concentrate on a flame. You can concentrate on the chakras in your body. The spinal cord has got the 8 chakras. You can concentrate on any of those. So basically what Patanjali is saying, to concentrate on the not self, whatever objects he's giving, they are the not self. Vedanta says no. Vedantic meditation is not concentration on the not self. It is only on the self. That is, but from yama to and dharana also, yes, dharana, practice of concentration, we agree, we do, but the object of concentration is different in Vedantic meditation and it is different in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Okay, and then dhyana is when the mind, the practice is over and the mind remains on that thought. That is called dhyana. So practice means what? What will happen is sometimes the mind will slip and go here and there. Then you bring it back again. So you do the practice. This practice is to be practiced. So you try to concentrate your mind on one object and then it'll run. Then you bring it back. It'll run. Then what will happen is the running will be less and the staying will become more and more and more until it reaches the state of dhyana. And dhyana means that mind will just stay there. It will not be running here and there. Okay. So when this dhyana is practiced for a long time, then the person, the yogi, will enter samadhi. And samadhi here means only savikalpa samadhi. So there is a duality. And then aham brahmasmi is the Vedantic meditation. This is what this Vishuddham, Vichinti and all this is aham brahmasmi. Because Vishuddham and all these attributes only fall for, only apply to Brahman. They do not apply to anybody else. Nobody else is Visheshena, Shuddham and all that. Nobody is there. So it's only Brahman. So aham brahmasmi, this will be the savikalpa samadhi. Means that thought is there that I am meditating on Brahman. And finally, this practice, when you practice savikalpa samadhi, it will take you into nirvikalpa, where the knower, the I, will completely dissolve into the pure consciousness. And then that Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitarthat, that will happen. That is this Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That the verse, earlier verse that we saw, Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitarthat, Sanyasa Yoga Yatayat Shuddha Sattvaha Yatayat. Because this is all this Yataha. Yataha is striving, trying, pursuing. All this from Yama to Samadhi is this pursuing. And it starts at Yama. That's why I'm telling you all this. That we see this because we are studying the Upanishad. We are only studying like the top rung of the ladder. But what is at the bottom, we also need to know, because we are at the bottom. I am at the bottom. I shouldn't say me. I am at the bottom. So I also need to know. So then you go from Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, and beyond that, Vijnana, Vijnana, Vijnana Janita, Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitarthat will come, which is Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So Vedanta Janita, because you already have done Swadhyaya and you have the knowledge that that final stage that I have reached is Brahman and nothing else. So how will you know? If you don't have the Vedantic knowledge, how will you know that that point that you have reached is Brahman? Who's going to tell you, right? So the guru has to tell you that in duality. That's why duality is required. So therefore guru is required. The guru is what is telling you that when you do this, what you will reach is Brahman. That's where this knowledge comes in, right? So this is going deeper into this verse. All right? Any questions? No questions? Everybody's clear? Okay. We'll read the next verse. Again, it is it's detailed. We'll complete it next time. There's no need to rush. Achintyam avyaktam anantarupam shivam prashantam amrutam brahmayonim tathadi madhyanta vihinamekam vibhum chidanandamarupa adbhutam. The unthinkable, the unmanifest, the one of endless forms, the ever auspicious, the peaceful, the immortal, the origin of the very creator, the one without a beginning, a middle and an end, the only one, the all-pervading, the knowledge bliss, the formless and the wonderful. So 13 attributes have been given, though Brahman can never be described by attributes, but some pointers have to be given. And so there are 13. So achintyam is the first one, unthinkable, which tells us that it is beyond the mind, which also tells us that you cannot reach it by the mind. It is not a thought or an emotion or a feeling that the mind can understand. So telling us that you need to drop the mind. We cannot hold on to the mind. That's why this sannyasa, this disidentification from the body, mind and intellect is very, very essential in the seat of meditation. Because unless we disidentify from the mind, we cannot reach it. Because then the mind will only think of things that it knows. And this is something that cannot be known by the mind. That's why it said achintya. So don't even bother to think about Brahman. Of course, in the initial stages, the axiom is there, as you think, so shall you become. So if you keep on thinking, I am Brahman, I am aham Brahmasmi, aham Brahmasmi, aham Brahmasmi, and if you can keep your mind on that thought alone, one day that aham will drop. Okay, so when we say achintya, nothing of the world, that's why we said that meditation we cannot do on anything outside, because the mind will keep thinking of that form and shape and color and whatnot. So that's why it should not be done. Unthinkable. Avyaktam, unmanifest. So manifest is that which is known by the senses. So by saying unmanifest, we are transcending the senses. Means that it can never be seen, it can never be smelt, touched, tasted, or heard. The five sense organs are incapable of knowing the supreme reality, because it is not an object of perception, it is the very subject itself. So beyond the senses. Avyaktam, anantam. Anantam, no anta. A and anta. Anta is end. There is no anta. Means there is no limit. Means it is limitless. Because if we would say that it has a limit, then there must be something else beyond that limit. Right? Boundary. So there is no boundary. It is limitless. It is infinite. Shivam, ananta rupam, formless, arupam, so formless. By saying limitless, we already presume formless, because if there is a limit, there can be a form. It can be a circular form, a square form, a triangular form, because then there are borders, there are limits. But now we have said there are no limits. So if you think about it, really, what form does space have? What form does air have? See, they are also formless. First form comes in Agni. Agni has form. And that's why in marriages, we go around Agni. Because it has a form and is the first one that can be seen by the eyes. So we can go, we can say we want to, any of the five elements would have worked, but Agni is used in marriage. You know, that consecrates the marriage, right? So Arupam, formless. Because it is limitless, obviously, it becomes formless. Shivam, auspicious, the most auspicious. Why? Because it's very pure. What is auspiciousness? Purity. It's very, very pure. There's nothing else to taint it. Prashantam, prakarshena shantam. Prashanta means which is that which is beyond shanta and ashanta. There are two words. Shanta, peaceful. Ashanta, not peaceful. So it's like, you know, I'm carrying a bag on my one shoulder, then my shoulder becomes tired, so I put the bag on the other shoulder, then this shoulder becomes shanta, peaceful, then after a while this shoulder starts hurting. So this shanta and ashanta, they are pairs of opposites. So this is prashanta, which is beyond shanta and ashanta, that because of which I come to know both peace and restlessness. So that is prakarshena shanta, which is beyond. It is not shanti. It should not be considered as shanti, because if you consider it as shanti, then there is an opposite ashanti to it, because they are shanti and ashanti, joy and sorrow, heat and cold, all the pairs of opposites are two sides of the same coin. This one is, it is not one side of the coin. Brahman is not one side of the coin, that there will be another side. There is no other side. So it is beyond this too. Prashantam, amritam, immortal. After having reached, there is no coming back to this sansara of birth and death. There is no more death. There is no more birth. So there cannot be any death. Death is there only to that those who are born. And what is born is the body. But the soul is never born. Brahma yonim, the creator, the yoni. Yoni is womb. The womb of the creator means the origin of the womb is the origin. Origin of Brahmaji. Here Brahma yonim means from where even Brahmaji has come. Means what? From Brahmaji to ant, everybody has come from there only, you know, from the pure consciousness, from that existence. Okay, I'm going to stop here. It's showing me 7:31, and we'll continue with this verse next time. So, are there any questions? Everybody's okay? All right. Okay. So before I close, I just want to tell you, Sudha, that I've sent an email to your secretary account and read it. It's important. Okay. All right. So we shall meet next Monday. Good night. Hari Om. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay, thank you all. See you next Monday.